Thank you, Alan. You're very kind. You left out, however, my perhaps greatest achievement. I'm a world-class introducer. At least so Don Lipsett thinks. Actually, once upon a time, I did have a world-class introduction. It was Brown University some years ago, and the sophomore class asked me to introduce Arthur Schlesinger, Jr. And I said, no. And they said, how come? And I said, because when you're introducing somebody, you're supposed to be able to say at least something more or less halfway nice, and I can't think of anything to say about Professor Schlesinger, which meets that description. And they said, oh, come on. And they couldn't get anybody else in the university to do it, so I did. I took this position that I figured that this man has got such a colossal ego that I can get up there and I can say, introduce him and say a series of things in which every word will be an insult and everybody in the audience will know it, and he will sit there and beam at the high praise. And I, honest to God, did it, and he sat there and beamed, and it worked, and copies are available on request. But, you know, over the years, Don Lipsett has asked me to do some pretty tough tasks, mainly introducing people I never heard of and had never seen before and knew nothing about. But I must say that tonight he's really thrown fastball at me, because, my gracious goodness, to introduce Irving Kristol is not a possible task. I mean, in the first place, I feel like the original superfluous man. It defies belief that there could be anybody in this room who doesn't know who Irving Kristol is. It defies belief that there could be anybody in this room who hasn't read at least some of, and most of you have read a lot of, Irving Kristol's work and have been moved by it and sometimes antagonized by it and often inspired by it and various other things. So that, I mean, one feels, what am I doing here? You know? Now, I had a bright idea, but as happens with many of my bright ideas, my wife vetoed it. But I'll tell you what it was. You know, the two greatest pianists in the world, violinists in the world, are Pinchas Zukerman and Itzhak Perlman. And they're both Israelis, about the same age. They sound a good deal alike. You can tell the difference between them if you listen very carefully. But they're always being confused for one another, you know. People will walk up to Zukerman and say, are you the one who? And he'll say, no, it's Perlman. And they'll walk up to Perlman and say, no, you know, you're speaking about Zukerman. Now, I'm not maintaining, mind you, that Irving Kristol has any peers, but if he had a peer, it would be Norman Podoritz, you know, the twin towers of neoconservatism. And I thought of making a lot of clever remarks about, no, he's the one who, no, he's the one, you know, that sort of thing. And though my wife vetoed it, I must say I tried it out on two or three people, and I will straighten you out on a couple of points. Irving, you may or may not know about the confusion. Irving is not the one who's married to Midge Dector. He's the one who's married to that great lady, Gertrude Himmelfarb. He's not the one who's the father-in-law of Elliot Abrams. He's the one who's the father of that wonderful kid who's been before this organization more than once and will be again, Bill Kristol. He's also the one who was, watch this, born in 1920. He's also the one who graduated from CCNY in 1940. And he's the one who then went on and worked for Commentary for a while, and then he became the co-founder of Encounter, and in 1965 was the founder of Public Interest. He's the very self-same one who was a professor of social thought, I think is the subject, at NYU. He's the very one that you read about in the Wall Street Journal. You read in the Wall Street Journal and New Republic and too many other journals to mention. And also the one who is the author of a variety of books, including my two favorites, The Reflections of a Neoconservative and Two Cheers for Capitalism. But you knew that already, you see. And so I'm not going to follow that line of introduction at all. Instead, I thought I'd not introduce Irving Kristol at all, the man who needs no introduction. Rather, I will introduce, or attempt to introduce, the subject which is the theme of this 24th annual meeting of the Philadelphia Society, and on which an aspect of he is going to be speaking. And that is the subject of charity, philanthropy, and related subjects. I'll show off my knowledge of Greek by pointing out to you that you, for something you never would have been able to figure out on your own, that philanthropy comes from philoanthropy, which means loving mankind. You're not impressed. I don't think you're impressed. That charity comes from the Latin caritas, meaning to the Latins, to the Romans, expensive or dear, but also meaning, according to Cicero, reverence for the gods, faithfulness, fidelity, piety toward the family and the republic and things like that, transformed in Christian charity to mean something else, meaning essentially what's involved in the biblical, in the book of John, when Jesus says, "Insomuch as you have done this to the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me." The idea that one does good, that one does charitable works for the sake of Jesus. There's a lot more. I stopped actually and read a number of encyclopedia articles in religious encyclopedias on the subject, seeing if I could learn anything I didn't already know. And though there are a lot of things I don't already know, my capacity for learning them is diminishing as the ages go by. There's, you know, potlatch. The Indian tribes out in what is now Washington State, or the ancient Celtic peoples, gave away things, bestowed benefits upon people, and attained social status in the doing. The more you could give away, the bigger shot you were. Right? So there's a whole range of these. But I'm most moved, personally, and most impressed by Maimonides' 8 degrees of charity. Maimonides, as most of you know, I assume, was the greatest Jewish intellectual of the 12th century, and probably for the 6 centuries before and after. A fantastic man. I won't give you his life story, but just to say that he reconciled Aristotle, revealed religion and reason so profoundly that St. Thomas picked it up and was powerfully influenced by Maimonides. Anyway, Maimonides developed this idea about there are 8 degrees of charity. He started at the top and worked down to, this is the most exalted, and the next best is this, and the next best is that, and so on. I'm going to do them to the extent that I can remember them in reverse order, that is, from his lowest to his highest, right? The below charity at all, of course, is people who don't indulge in it. The lowest grade of charity, which of course is better than none, is he who gives grudgingly, right? The next step up is he who gives less than he should, but does it gracefully. The next step up from there is he who, he who gives, but only after he has been asked. And the next step up is he who gives even before he is asked. Now you notice with the first four of these, the bottom four of these, that both giver and recipient are aware of who's who, right? These have got their disadvantages because there can be embarrassments and things like that. The next step up, therefore, is he who gives, and the recipients know who it is, but he doesn't know who gets it. Maimonides gives an example. The scholars who walk along, and he knows there are poor people back there, and he ties up some goodies in a bag, throws it over his shoulder, and never looks back. That's so that the poor will not have to be mortified by having received the charity, right? The next step above that is, this is grade 6, is the other way around. The recipient doesn't know who gave it, but the giver does know. And then what I always thought, and what my wife, who grew up in a Jewish household in which this was practiced very, very much, I always thought was the highest was that form of charity in which neither the giver nor the recipient knows, right? That way, nobody needs to be embarrassed. No giver can be proud of himself. You know, the whole thing is absolutely anonymous. And as I say, we both thought, until we really looked it up, that that was Maimonides' highest form. There was one other and higher form, though. And to all lesson in etymology that I gave you earlier about charitas and philanthropy and things like that, I would add a Hebrew word, teruma. I suppose that's how it's pronounced, teruma, which means uplifting. And I'm going to read you a translation of Maimonides in that regard. Remember, this is the first one in his order. There are 8 degrees in the giving of charity, one higher than the other. The highest degree, than which there is nothing higher, is to take hold of a Jew who has been crushed and to give him a gift or a loan or to enter into partnership with him or to find work for him and thus put him on his feet that he will not be dependent upon his fellow men. Concerning this it is said, then shalt thou uphold him. Uphold him so that he should not fall and become a dependent. Now I submit to you that there's an ecumenical message there, that the highest form of charity in which we can all agree, conservatives, neoconservatives, libertarians, all of us, is that where one can help one's fellow man in such a way that they can stand on their own, become independent, and therefore become responsible, and therefore become free. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Irving Kristol.